Survivor Specialist John and McKenna are back, and we are hoping my internet is good on my computer this week. If you haven't seen last week's episode, it's okay. But
actually, McKenna, that's one of our most watched episodes, just so
which is crazy. John, I think the people love you a lot more than they love me because you carried that episode for sure. So yeah, we are ready to dive into episode 11 and talk about it in the past using our outwit, outplay, and outlast moments of the week.
McKenna, is season 50 cooking at this point? Are we just at a point where like it's actually kind of enjoyable? Because I think it's been a very like middling season for a long time. And Phil talked about it in Digging Deeper with Omar yesterday about how he's not sure where he's going to end up ranking 50. It's going to depend on like the end game here. We have two more episodes left, so we can't really figure it out. Like, he knows it's not in his bottom 10 seasons, but it could land anywhere kind of in between 39 and like 11 at this point.
It's hard because I think a lot of the stuff going on, I don't like. And I think the same twist here, I don't necessarily like this twist, I think, but because of the outcome, I'm biased. So like, I didn't like the duo's twist, even with the outcome. Yeah. So like, that one is bad for me personally. But then this one, I don't hate it. I think if it was larger numbers, like if this is where they wanted to do the split tribal council, like we're talking about in like 46 over on the Patreon, where there's large numbers, it's right after Mergatory, and we feel like we need to do a split tribal council. I think this is a mechanic that could happen, but when it's 4-4-1 going back and forth, I don't know. I don't think it's great.
I think Omar made a really good point in Digging Deeper this week that they just kept the same schedule after the Kyle medevac without changing the schedule. I had mentioned it back when we talked about the Blood Moon when it happened, where it's like, I think they wanted to do this at 6 or at 18 with like groups of 6 rather than groups of 5 and 2 in exile. He mentioned that like with the double duos, that would mean you'd have an even number for that vote too. Mm-hmm. And then for this, you would also have an even number with two people going home here with 5-5, right? So I think they didn't really change things out. Now, that means they probably got rid of a double elimination at some point that we didn't need, or that we did need, presumably next week, if honest, or in the finale. Maybe. But I think what it really comes down to, this is so interesting, though, because having this one person between both groups was so fascinating to watch. To watch the way that Suri kind of had to navigate this way of like, okay, they're going for Ozzy, but like, I can't tell Ozzy the code word to play his idol. And then she's kind of like gifted this moment of like, well, Joe will only do this if we won't rope in Rizzo. And Suri's like, bing, this is like exactly what I need. It's so fascinating because like being able to work with that one person in the middle is so important. I actually think it really stresses the importance of the social game. And like beyond just like the strategic aspect of it, but the actual social aspect of it, because the one thing, maybe it came up at some point, but like it never seems like this Tiffany, Suri, Emily, Devin's group ever had Jonathan being like, yeah, we should totally go Suri here.
No, right? As soon as like Jonathan went up to Suri and is like, all right, what are we doing?
Yeah.
I was like, well, Suri's safe. Like there's no stress. But I didn't know if there was, you know, some sort of split vote that might throw it in favor of Devin's and Emily. And I think that's where the tension was, is like, does Suri use her vote and does it split and, you know, what have you? But she used it correctly.
I think this is a lot like last week where we're really lucky in the results of the twist. Maybe not like the vote out results, but just the results of how these broke up. I mean, I think, was it somebody on Twitter at some point said, like, at least it wasn't Ozzy, Rizzo, Devins, and Suri in one of these groups?
Right.
Right? Like, it could have been bad. The split could have been very bad. But, like, I think the splits worked out really interestingly because you had, like, this group of two and this group of two on the one side. And then the other side, you had seemingly three people who were working together, but one of them's kind of, like, less working together with them in the eyes of, like, the other two. And Aubrey, who's like clearly the odd one out, and you have Ozzy really overplaying his hand and doing this over description of like his end game to her and like pandering to her for a jury vote, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You have, I was shocked when Joe said, no, Rizzo has to be included. And Anthony Palmer mentions it here that like no one's giving credit to Rizzo, that two episodes ago he wanted to make sure Joe was included in the vote. And Joe did that today, right? Like it's the fact that no, it's Jonathan comes. It's like, no, we don't need Rizzo. But Joe's like, we don't need him now, but we need him in the future. And like, that might be the most strategic thinking we've ever seen from Joe.
Yeah. And we, the big comparison right now is Ozzy and Andy from 47. But we were actually doing our podcast during 47. So we've already done that, like overplaying your jury management skills. When Ozzy started to do that, I was like, oh no, this is Andy 2.0 with how he's trying to manage the jury. And you don't necessarily manage the jury with spilling all of your secrets.
It's the worst type of jury management. The best type of jury management is a social game. It's like playing a social game with someone. It's not saying, hey, this is how I'm going to get to the end of the game. The thing that really did it for me was when Ozzy says, oh yeah, Suri and I have had a day one alliance and like we're never going to back on it. And like I think Phil mentioned it, maybe Will mentioned it. Somebody mentioned it in one of the previous podcasts this week. But when he's explaining this, like, I want to go to the end with the very best, so I'm taking Suri. The fact that he didn't follow that up with being like, and you, Aubrey, was insane.
That's where I thought this was going. Like, even if you vote her out, you at least said, like, I want to take you to the end. Like, I don't know, something could have happened. But so we're not talking about that for our outwit moment. We are actually going to go a little bit kookier and going with prophetic dreams, because Ozzy had this dream come to him that he was sitting with Coach and Stephanie and didn't play his idol and just like woke up in a fright because he was still in the game and then all of a sudden he wasn't and he had to like recalibrate himself and he needed to listen to his dreams. Like a lot of these survivor dreams come to fruition.
Yeah, it's one of these interesting things. And obviously, like, this isn't the most strategic of things, but it's kind of like the biggest strategic thing we have to compare here, because dreams have informed survivor strategy a couple of times in the past.
And crazy, this is one of those, though, which is crazy to say that we actually have like examples of dreams impacting survivor strategy.
And we're not talking about dreams from Fiji.
That's true.
But this is interesting because even at the end, right, like as Ozzy's being voted out, he's like, I had the dream and I still didn't do it. Yeah, Ozzy, you should have done it, right? Something was telling you you had to do this and you didn't.
Yeah, I know from watching you play a game, John, a bunch of people were talking about playing idols and then you go to a tribal council and you negated what, one vote or something with that idol, but you just had so many people being like, they left with their idol in their pocket. They did this, did that, and, you know, didn't properly use an idol. And then you were just like, I just felt the vibes of I needed to play this.
Sometimes the universe tells you you should play your idol and you just got to do it. Even if it's like not the best idol to play, you got to do it. If the universe
and that
is saying,
idol can only be played on himself. Like this isn't like a strategic move, you know, to move forward with where like, you know, Rizzo in 49, where it could be played on someone else. This is literally only for him.
Yeah. And I think what it really comes down to is Phil made the best comparison here. This is James and China again. Right? Where it's like, you think like that one more vote and you really, really secure your place with this idol. In this case, like, it doesn't matter if you don't get there to that vote.
Yeah. And so one of the most prophetic dreams that we've had is Cowboy in Cook Islands talking about Plan Voodoo, the split vote, the most genius thing we've ever heard about that hasn't really been talked about before Cowboy. And yes, well, they've had some split votes, but like, it's just like this, what if we split the vote? And people are like, oh, we don't just need to dump on one person. We can actually ensure our safety here. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't come to fruition the way Cowboy wants to do it, but it really impacts the rest of Survivor with him saying, like, split the vote.
Yeah, the big thing with Plan Voodoo is it is the way to flush the idol, right? It has become standardized in Survivor. The fact that we don't talk about it as Plan Voodoo anymore might have something to do with Cook Islands being a little taboo to talk about, but it's basic, like, Survivor 101 at this point, right? Mm-hmm. Because, and why it was such a big deal in Cook Islands is you have to remember, this is the second season with an idol that gets played after the votes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really important as to why a split vote. In Guatemala, the idol's played beforehand. It's more just like an immunity necklace again.
Right.
Preventing the votes from being put on that person in the first place. With Panama, it becomes the God idol, and it's mm-hmm. still the God idol in Cook Islands. And Cowboy's correct, right? He has this idea of how to properly split the vote so that you can flush the idol. The problem is the only person he tells it to is the person with the God idol. And that makes it a little difficult.
The mangoose. If Survivor editors tell us about your prophetic dream, you go home, new rule.
Not quite. We have a second example that doesn't quite happen with, but...
eventually in the game.
Yeah, eventually in the game, you go home. But it is so interesting because in this place, this is someone coming up with... It's not the fact that it is a prophetic dream here. It's just like... Sometimes our minds work better in the subconscious, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes our minds work better subconsciously. That's why we do have some like of these like revelatory dreams at times. We can process things. Maybe our minds are crazy and they present it in some weird way with your like ancestors and stuff like they do with Cowboy.
Yeah.
But it kind of lets you process the information you've had throughout the day so that you can make better sense of it. And mm-hmm. that's really what we see with Plan Voodoo here, right? Like this is a conclusion somebody was going to come to eventually. It just happened to be come to by Cowboy in a dream. Wild dream.
And then the next one, I thought it was a dream that involved chickens, but it's just the montage Survivor uses. But it's Shambo's dream about getting out Dave Ball. And she apparently has had like 30 other prophetic dreams like this. And she knew Dave has to go. Well, it doesn't happen in the episode that the dream happens. It happens in the next one, but it's still that, you know, I had a dream that Dave is going, Dave has to go, and it's something Shambo focuses on. This comes true, but Shambo does go home eventually in the season.
The interesting thing about this dream is definitely the presentation that Survivor gives.
The montage of this is insane.
It's just like flash cuts to chickens. It's like the it's like the Kuroshev effect, right?
The Kuleshov, yeah.
The Kuleshov effect.
This is like the second time we've talked
about it. Yeah, it's the second time we've talked about the Kuleshov effect in this season, which is wild. But it is one of those things where it's just like we're getting these like flashes and everything to make us feel a very specific way. And quite frankly, I think the editors are trying to make you guys look how crazy Shambo is. But it's also like, okay, but where is this actual, like, is Danger Dave Ball actually Danger? Like, is that what's happening here?
We also have, there's also Andrea's dream of Malcolm finding an idol in Caramon.
I forgot about that one.
I did too. That's a great pull. We are talking Caramon, but just in a few minutes. But yeah, Shambo... It's a thing where like nobody wants to take her word, and Russell is using Shambo throughout the season. So he is like, all right, we'll get Dave eventually, but first we've got to do this. He also, there's the immunity situation, which I think is in that episode.
I think so.
And then
it's been a little while since we watched that episode for the Patreon many moons ago.
Yeah. And so, I think it's the Megan. No.
That's the Samoa merge. Yeah,
that's right.
No, this is the auction episode.
Oh, right. So like, it doesn't come true right away, but it's still something that Russell uses to have Shambo on his side mm-hmm. will eventually get Dave, because she's going to be focused on getting Dave now because of this dream.
Yeah, and I mean, Shambo is blindsided with the actual boot here. Who is Sean, I think? I should really just look this up.
I believe it's the John boot.
But Shambo is kind of blindsided here because she thought they were going for Dave. And then they end up, yeah, it is the John Fincher boot. But they end up going for John because, like, trying to blindside John with his idol. And despite the fact that this could really be bad for Shambo, the fact that I kind of hate giving Russell credit here, but the fact that Russell is actually enough to, like, realize, oh, Shambo's going to be targeting Dave, that means we can target Dave further down. And then we give Shambo Dave as appeasement, and then Shambo still sticks with us. And he's really smart gameplay, in all honesty.
Yeah, exactly. Are we ready to go on to outplay?
Yeah, let's go. Let's outplay a little bit.
Surprisingly, in our podcast, we haven't talked about Bermuda Triangle. I think this is a really interesting challenge. It's the challenge that we see in 50, if you don't know the actual terminology for the challenge. And I like this challenge a lot because it is unpredictable. We talked a little bit about it before, where we have such different winners in like, we have a Jonathan win, we have a Kenzie win. So it's like this big guy, this small girl. Like, I feel like this is a challenge that anybody could win. Ozzy in the predictions episode was the favorite to win this challenge because someone of a similar build in Woo won the challenge. So I like that because of the ocean's unpredictability, it doesn't give you like a standard, this person is going to win, this person is better off at this challenge. It does have that bit of an equalizer.
Yeah, I think this is one where being shorter does benefit you, just like with most balance things, because being tall, your center of gravity is a lot higher and it's a little harder to like figure it out. If you look at who's really doing well in this challenge in 50, it is a lot of like the shorter women and how they're positioning themselves and like kind of lower down. But I also think like Jonathan had a point when he said in this episode of 50 that like larger feet are actually beneficial in this one.
I think I could win this because I'm short and have big feet.
There you go. Yeah, I think like you definitely have an advantage on me. Like, yes, I have big feet, but I'm also 6'4". So that is something that makes it really hard for me to balance on the water in things. Also, don't like heights. So that also doesn't help me in this, even though this is a very minor height. It's enough of a height to really, let me tell you, McKenna, my heights, my biggest weakness if I go on Survivor is anything that involves being suspended up above something.
Oh my gosh.
Slight balance beam, I'm probably freaking out. Let's be real.
So with the Bermuda Triangle, it has gotten to a point, I guess, aside from really 42, where they have to go up the rungs. And then a lot of them land on that top platform. And Jeff was ready in Karamoan to just wait it out. And whoever drops. But Brenda and Andrea are like, well, we don't really want to do that. We're going to do 1 foot. And Jeff was like, this is outside of me. If you guys want to do 1 foot, go for it. But the rules in this challenge do not say you have to be on 1 foot. But they decide to go for it to end the challenge a little bit earlier. And we see Andrea wind up winning it. And then that has cascaded down to what we see today in 50 of, we got to raise the foot.
Yeah, it's really interesting because Karamoan's the first time we see this challenge in its current iteration. Like, we could, there are arguments to be made, like it's in Marquesas and Pearl Islands and Panama, but it's not really the same thing, right?
No,
like,
it's, you not think about this challenge, it's just balancing on a raft in water.
Yeah, like, okay, technically, I suppose if we squint hard enough, it's the same thing, but it's not the same. So Karamoan's the first time we see this. We see people working on it, and Karamoan's also a time when we could have endurance challenges go on for a long time. I think Will made a really good point about this on the recap this week, where this challenge kind of sucks in ideal conditions.
How so?
Because you have to get to this 1 foot mark. It's actually a lot more exciting. Like, you don't want the 42 conditions where it's like super choppy and it's over in 3 minutes.
Right.
But you maybe you do for Survivor production's sake. but you don't want it going like, okay, let's just keep going, keep going, keep going.
Everyone knows that familiar feeling when you just can't answer that one simple question. What's for dinner? Well, thanks to Omaha Steaks, I find myself in that situation way less frequently. Dinner is handled in minutes when I keep my freezer stocked with restaurant-quality protein from Omaha Steaks. And it's not just tender steaks. We're talking flavorful burgers, chicken, seafood, sides, and even desserts, all delivered directly to my door. So whether it's a rushed weeknight evening or a Saturday night cookout, you can have quality protein on hand when you need it. And let me fill you in on a little secret I've been using the past few years. Omaha Steaks proteins aren't just great to have in your own fridge. They also make fantastic gifts. When my dad's birthday comes around, I'll gift him one of the many options of steak packs, and it's an instant win-win. One year I got him the complete cookout collection, which is perfect because he enjoys grilling up everyone a great meal, and I make sure I'm there to celebrate with him, so I get a fantastic steak dinner myself. Win-win. Feel free to use that one. And I want to clarify something for any skeptics out there. Yes, frozen delivery can be this good. Omaha Steaks is known for their meticulous aging process and vacuum-sealed individual packaging. Shipped nationwide and arrives frozen, ready for grilling, searing, and roasting with minimal effort and time. No last-minute runs to the store. They can't match the quality Omaha spent generations perfecting. And if you've never tried them, the Burger Perfection Flight is the perfect introduction. For just $79.99, you get 20 premium steak burgers crafted from 5 distinct cuts of meat. We got filet mignon burgers, New York strip burgers, ribeye burgers, brisket burgers, and sirloin burgers, each with their own different flavor and style. So try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99, plus get $35 off with promo code BEEF. This isn't some rinky-dinky discount. That's $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF, B-E-E-F, for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
In Backtrack by Mark Cameron, the past is prologue for a violent criminal with three names, Ricky Lee Pink. Pink has been rotting in jail for years, plotting revenge against the man who thwarted his almost perfect theft of $5 million in diamonds. That man, Wayne Cutter, is deceased, but his grandson, Arliss, is very much alive, for now. Pink and Cutter about to collide in a violent confrontation on a floating city in the middle of the water, a massive cruise ship traveling around Alaska's Inside Passage. An experienced U.S. Marshal, Arliss must move fast but cautiously, or he may be the last of the Cutter family tree. As Survivor fans, it's not just the strategy and social dynamics that keep us enthralled. It's also the idea of man versus wild. This concept is at the heart of all Mark Cameron's novels, and it's especially prevalent in Backtrack. It's one of the main reasons I enjoyed this book, and as listeners of The Specialists, I know you will too. If you're an outdoor enthusiast, fan of wilderness thrillers by authors C.J. Box and William Kent Kruger, or just love a fast-paced action thriller from the likes of Brad Thor or Jack Carr, make sure to pick up your copy of Backtrack today. An Alaskan resident and Texas native with nearly 30 years in law enforcement, Cameron is a master of action and gritty detail. He brings explosive authenticity to Backtrack as U.S. Marshal Arliss Cutter's manhunt will employ all his skills and knowledge as a member of the U.S. Marshal's Service. Backtrack by Mark Cameron is available now wherever books are sold.
I want to see a little bit more struggle because it's not really that entertaining of a challenge to watch. It kind of is because everyone makes funny splooshes. But
yeah, when they're diving in the water, it's hilarious.
Yeah, but you want it just like you want almost like a light breeze, just so it's a little choppy, so something can catch you off guard, rather than like the calm stillness we got this week on 50.
Yeah, and so that's some of our other examples that we're going with is 42 and 46, but not necessarily the how the challenge played out, but it's a split tribal council in the new era. This challenge is used as a split tribal council challenge, and I was shocked to realize that as I was going through a bunch of it. And we do the same here in 50, but it's a singular winner in Jonathan, where 42 and 46, we have the two winners from each grouping.
Yeah. It's really, I don't know if I, Survivor in the new era for these split tribals has really liked putting endurance challenges as these ones that make it so that they're split. And I guess like it kind of makes sense in the case of like 46, where there's a reward associated with it. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if I like it, in all honesty. I don't know if I like it being the endurance of it, because it's like between this or shimmy sweeps a lot of the time.
Yeah.
And I get what you're going for, Survivor, but at the same time, I don't know, like it's an individual challenge. I want it treated like an individual challenge, which at least it was this week in 50.
Right.
Like, despite the fact that they're split up afterwards. So mm-hmm. I didn't feel as bad, where I was like, okay, cool. We're watching these people go head to head, but not mm-hmm. really head to head. It was, it works better when it's individual.
And I also feel like we have to mention the second chance of it all, with the buoy popping up mm-hmm. for the advantage in the game. I do think that's a great addition to this challenge of I'm going to pop up this reward for you and get off. Like, this is, temptations are always mm-hmm. something that we look for. Do we want another advantage in the game? Probably not. But at the point in second chance, it wasn't that bad.
No. And again, I think you actually kind of bring up a better point here again. It's like, endurance challenges used to be fun because we got temptations. And it's a very big like study. I mean, it tells you more about what people are thinking in the game, how safe they feel in the game. And I actually think we really lose that by not having temptations in the new era for these challenges.
What would be interesting is adding a temptation for the split tribal council. Not that I want to keep split tribal councils, but adding a temptation for the split tribal council. Would you rather your team lose a member to go and you not win immunity, or you get an advantage? Like mm-hmm. you could be the lower placement now, just because you wanted to try for an advantage. Can you use this advantage in this tribal council? Like, there's a lot of like inner workings that would be interesting. And especially in the one in 46 with the reward, like you're sacrificing now other people's food potentially if your whole group doesn't last the longest. Well, not your whole group, but someone in your group lasting the longest.
Yeah, it does have this, like, kind of like, to quote Jeff from the episode of season 46, it's a real Sophie's choice of it all. totally not a Sophie's choice whatsoever, but that's fine. He's just so fascinating because, like, presumably this rule that we see this week of like getting up to 1 foot, because we see it in the 46 challenge as well. Mm-hmm. Presumably it was there for the 42, but 42 just didn't last long enough to get there because it was so choppy.
Right.
So it just, again, it kind of leads into this. One thing that we haven't really talked about this season is just like the new era mentality of like, oh, the schedule is so condensed mm-hmm. that we have to cut these. We have to make an end point for these endurance challenges.
Do you think there's a boat off to the side just like revving and stirring waves?
No, definitely not, because that would be like completely against like, whatever Will talks about with like competition laws and stuff.
No, I'm just kidding.
But
I don't think it's actually a vote.
But it is one of those things where it's like, we want that old school. I really like seeing people push themselves to the limits to win immunity, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's why I like old school endurance challenges. And despite the fact that this is a 24 person season, and we have been talking about like the pacing of the game of 24 people in 26 days, and it's way too much. But this is one of those instances where it's like, okay, but we really need these old school like endurance challenges again, because I really just want to see how far people are willing to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And
46 has one of the best moments for this challenge, because Q tries to play the alphabet game and it goes hilariously bad.
If you want to relive that, go over to our Patreon. That is the episode that we will be watching over there. So watch that so you can listen to us tomorrow. It is episode several, season 46, episode 7. We ready to go on to Outlast, John?
I mean, we were just talking about Q having some fun in a challenge. So let's talk about our Outlast moment now.
Okay. So our Outlast moment is players who just want to have fun while playing the game. And this was a segment that I really loved from Devin's. And I think that's something that we miss a lot in Survivor is the strategy, and something you love when people hate each other. and things like that. But we don't have a lot of just like, I'm playing Survivor, I'm having fun. Like, you get it from the super fan, like, oh my gosh, I'm playing Survivor, but not the way that Devin's is approaching this segment. And I think there are very few people who also emanate that. Mm-hmm. And I think one that really stands out comes from season one, and that's Greg Buess. He is also, season one is a different game, sort of, because it's more of the social experiment of it all, too. But still, he's like, he still is playing the game, but also just having fun, having a coconut phone, going in the mud hole, like, will she, won't she, with Colleen. Like, Greg is just the epitome of a fun guy.
Yeah, I think, like, the approach that Devin's has to the game, I think, does come, like, it kind of has, like, this, like, laissez-faire approach to the game. And mm-hmm. I think it does come from his experience on Edge of Extinction, mm-hmm. where, you know, he gets voted out, he gets back in, he's kind of has playing with house money the entire game. And then he gets to bring that again in a returning player season. What did you make of his dancing segment, though? Like, the dancing itself, was it too much? Was it too little? Like, was it just right? I was
putting it all up with Devin's, because he wasn't, like, dancing on someone's grave. Like, he wasn't just like, aha, hee-hee, for you guys suck. Like, it's like, I just did a badass move in Survivor. I flipped a coin to stay in the game. I am giddy as a schoolgirl and just running around this island, and I got an idol out of it. I can pull my shenanigans again. Like, he is just, if it had that, like, I'm going to, you know, make you regret that you're on the island with me kind of vibe, then I think it would be different. But he's just like, I'm a dad, happy to be here.
Yeah, I think it's one of those moments where it's just like, he's really embracing the fact that he's on Survivor. And it is something mm-hmm. that we don't see enough. Even in the super fan era, I agree with him. Like, we don't see people just, like, having the fun of being Survivor, because it's a little too serious, right? And I think this is another kind of victim of the 26-day game. Mm-hmm. Without those off days, we don't have people able to revel in their, like, the fun of it all. Like Greg Buess, like, in season one. And again, like you said, this is a different game at this point, right? It's the social experiment more. Mm-hmm. It's more focusing on, like, the building of the society and everything. But Greg's out here with a coconut phone,
mm-hmm.
right? And just, like, having fun. And he's a character. He's weird. He's wacky.
His home video with his sister, letting everybody watch it, and just, like, then his home video back that they mailed back to his sister. Like, he is one of the wackiest characters. And I know Survivor has tried to get him back before, and we'll never see him again. But if he were to come back, I think he's bringing that same energy of, like, what am I doing here? We're just going to have fun. We're going to see what the heck happens and run with it. Like, he's just there for a good time and maybe to win $1 million.
Yeah. And that's fine, right? Like, again, it was the experience of it all, and it was the embracing experience. Mm-hmm. And I think, like, with Greg, that's just who he is as a person.
Right.
And I think, like, that was Greg just being Greg on Survivor and not being completely swayed by the fact that there was $1 million on the line.
Mm-hmm.
But,
continue.
Yeah, I just think, like, I talk about, like, I mean, obviously, I talk about a lot how I really like the drama of reality TV. A lot of that drama can come from people having fun, though. Mm-hmm. Like, people just being themselves and enjoying the experience. That is, I think, what we need to inspire people to apply for Survivor again. Not that people aren't applying for Survivor already, but
we have a comment saying, he was such a gem of a person to find, especially for the first season. I agree. This moment with Devin's is just something that I identify with, because, like, whenever I've played Survivor, it's for the fun of it, the love of the game, play the challenges, have fun, and not necessarily to, like, see where my strategic chops can get me. It's like, just let's do this thing. Let's have fun. You know, what are we here for? So I think Tyson also gives off of this fun energy, but he has that strategic mind to him. But it's that just like wacky, I'm going to run around in a loincloth on my first season. I'm going to wear a cupcake belt. I'm going to, you know, be the coconut bandits.
Yeah, I think Tyson has really embodied this throughout all four of his seasons. He gets a little less fun of it when we get to Winners at War, I think, because he is kind of at a different point of his life and everything. Children, and, you know, is treating Survivor like a job because it's like allowing him to spend time with his daughters and things like that. But in his first three seasons, especially, and I think especially in Blood versus Water, which is interesting that it's his winning season that he, I feel, is like the most jovial about it.
Mm-hmm.
It really does feel like Tyson is going out there to have fun for the sake of having fun. Like, yes, he's going out for Survivor. Yes, he's going out because, like, this is, you know, a good paycheck for him and everything like that. But it's also something that he just enjoys. I don't think it's a coincidence that Tyson is one of the survivors who still has a podcast about Survivor.
That's true. And right? Like, he also talks about, like, other reality TV show, too. Like, he just, like, has fun. And we went on House of Villains. Like, that's not a show to, like, you know, be competitive. Well, it is. But it's, like, it's a laugh of a show. Like, you have fun. He's working with Tom Sandoval. Like, there's a bunch of things going on with House of Villains that it's not like Survivor where it's like you have your head in the game and you're like trying to, you know, win that $1 million. That he just brings that air to the game that can be a little bit negative, but I've talked about this before. Like, he has that effect of like, just, I'm okay with this.
Yeah.
And it makes it funny, and I don't know how he does it, but he just brings a levity to a season whenever he's in it.
Yeah, I think what it really comes down to, and I think there is a reason why when you talk to survivors about Tyson and why Tyson can do so well in it, is because he is a very likable person. And it is because he is having fun, right? Because he is exuding fun. Look at, I think there's actually this really great contrast we see in 50, right? Where we have Devins dancing around, being happy and stuff. And like, yeah, people are fed up with Devins, but like, they're still enjoying him being around. They're still laughing and everything with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have curmudgeon-y Joe lying in the shelter being all like doom and gloom the entire time. Which would you rather be spending time with?
A fully naked Tyson in token jeans. That's a man who's there to have fun.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, definitely, like, you have that scene of Joe and Ceri just in the boat, and Joe's just like, I don't know what to do. And then Devins is just running around in the woods and being like happy-go-lucky. And it's just like such a beautiful moment where he is playing for himself, the fans, his family, like Jeff, all at once, but it's not putting the weight on his shoulders. He doesn't have that weight of the game and like, I'm going to let people down. I think he would let people down if he wasn't this version of Devins.
I agree. I think it's kind of like Phil mentioned it in Digging Deeper yesterday, how Angelina was kind of the disappointment of the season, not because like, I mean, the edit obviously did her dirty, but she wasn't, because she's in a better place in life, she isn't like the same antics-y Angelina we got 7 years ago. So because of that, like, that is what Devins is doing, though, right? Like, Devins, mm-hmm. I think it's kind of the advantage of Devins going out there for 38 at a time in his life where he was kind of just, like, completely formed, wasn't going through major life changes afterwards, and why we still have Devins here. It really does make you question why Devins was the alternate for this season.
I know. My wife said that at the same time while watching. Like, why is he the alternate? I had a time watching this episode, definitely a bunch of ups and downs. And I feel like that's kind of what you want, is to just feel a wide range of emotions. And to have this just like glee while watching was a nice refresh from some of the other scenes that we've gotten throughout 50.
I agree. I think this episode kind of had it all. And like, I still think last week's episode was better, But I understand people who are saying that this is their favorite episode of the season so far, because it really did like give us a lot of Survivor. It gave us all the aspects of it. We have the grumpiness. I was kind of saying this about Joe, just like with my friends and things like that, where, yeah, is Joe kind of miserable to have on the season? 100%. But when was the last time we had someone so bitterly enraged at the presence of another person on the season? Right? Like, this is essentially, like, again, like, going back to 46, which we're talking about on the Patreon, right? This is that same type of hatred that you had for, like, Venus on that season.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like, yeah. This is, like, it is a essence of reality TV that's kind of faded away in probably the post-COVID era, I would really say, especially, that we've, like, moved away from this idea of reality TV is supposed to have drama attached to it. And, like, you get that by having people who absolutely hate each other in the same room with each other. So we need that sometimes. And I'm actually, like, yeah, I don't like watching Joe that much. He's good. He has a very inspiring story.
Mm-hmm.
He is terrible at Survivor strategy. But again, like, maybe his best move ever, like, being like, yo, let's bring Rizzo in. Like, he might actually be, like, thinking ahead now. Like, that's promising.
Mm-hmm.
But he's bringing something that if we had, I don't know, if we had someone else in that archetype, someone like David Kinney from Joe's own season, right? Like, in that, like, beefy man archetype, it wouldn't be the same as having someone, like, you almost need Joe there because he's kind of playing, like, the Rudy role in Borneo.
No way.
He's closer
to BB than anything. Don't give me Rudy.
No. But he has, like, that curmudgeon-y character, right? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Obviously, we love Rudy, but, I think, like, Joe has that, right?
Yeah.
So, we don't quite get there enough. We've had sprinklings of it. Whale here in the comments mentions Keturah and Bruce. Yeah, like, that's the type of thing that we need. If that was really played out a little bit too much, I think here we finally hit that balance again of, like, these two people hate each other for absolutely no reason, and it's so funny.
Yes. Well, I think that is our show, John, unless you have anything else that you need to add.
Nope.
All right, well, make sure you watch season 46, episode 7 for the Patreon. Make sure you like and subscribe to the video and do all the things, the channel. But before you do, John, what's going on in the Specialist Universe?
I already mentioned it earlier. Phil and Will broke down the episode on Wednesday. We're very high on it. Phil was joined by Omer from season 42 yesterday. Really great conversation. Omer's always a great guest. Always great to hear what he has to say. So make sure you check that out if you haven't. I'm sorry Blake wasn't there. He decided he had better things to do than podcasts this week. You can blame him for it. Phil will be joined by Owen, I think, tomorrow for the power rankings. They're just trying to nail down the time, but I'm pretty sure it's supposed to be tomorrow. So that's Owen for 43. Always a pleasure to have Owen on the podcast. And he's joined by Tommy Smokes is finally going to be here on Tuesday. Hopefully there's not another scheduling conflict. He should be here for the predictions on Tuesday. Should be really fun to hear what Tommy has to say about the season. Mm-hmm. I just following him along on Twitter. He's, like, had some really good insight into the season so far. So definitely worth checking that one out as well. Recap after the penultimate episode of season 50 next week. And McKenna and I will be here. Rewind it all down next Friday.
Alrighty, everybody. We will see you next week with another banger episode of Survivor 50. We hope. And see you later.